All right, we'll let the musicians go down while you're turning in your Bibles to the book of Genesis, if you haven't done so already, chapter 13. All right, out of respect for the Word of God, let's stand together as I begin reading with verse 1. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord.
Thank you, Brother Chandler. As we continue on in Genesis, last week we arrived with Abraham, finally, in the land of Canaan. He came in from the north and headed towards the south. And his first stop was in Shechem in the plain of Moreh, which means strength and instruction. And reminds us that we need the strength that comes from the instruction of the Word of God. We saw that the Canaanite was then in the land, representing our fallen nature and a fallen world of temptation all around us. We saw that Abraham built his altar between Bethel and Hai, which means between the house of God and heaps of ruin. And it's a reminder that we live between either. We can take a left turn and head and end up in a heap of ruin, or we can take a right turn and end up at the house of God. It's much better, by the way, to be at Bethel than at Hai. And then a famine came, and we followed Abraham out of the land of Canaan and into Egypt, which seems like it would just be a short little jaunt off to across the county line, but actually was a journey of about 500 miles from where he had been at Beersheba, the southernmost part of Canaan, all the way to where Pharaoh was in what is now modern-day Cairo, the capital of Egypt. And there he lied about his wife and told her to confirm the lie that she was just his sister. This was a half-lie because she was a half-sister, not just a sister. But it was all lie because she was not just his sister. She was all wife. And a half-lie is still a lie. In fact, a half-lie compounds it because not only have you lied, but you've insulted my intelligence with a half-truth. But he lied, and Pharaoh took Sarah to become part of his harem. There, Pharaoh's had many wives, and she was going to become one of his many wives. But there was always a time frame where the future wife would be set aside and groomed for that position. And during that time, Abraham took a dowry, took wealth from Pharaoh, and all this time Sarah sitting in the palace wondering what her husband has gotten her into. And if God had not intervened by plaguing Pharaoh's house, I wonder if Abraham would have ever manned up and said, I lied, that is my wife. God had to intervene and spare Sarah and save Abraham from this terrible predicament. And they were thrust out of the country, and they finally returned back to Canaan. When we come to Genesis 13, we find that it is positive in that it is a return to God's will. It is a back to Bethel episode. But it is negative in that we will see some of the fallout of Abraham's bad decisions. And we're going to read about a few more bad decisions made by Abraham's nephew, Lot. I want you to consider chapter 13 under three main points. The first is, notice that they went back to Bethel. In verse 1, it says, Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. Now, Abram was already wealthy when he went into Egypt, but he has compounded his wealth while he was in Egypt. And now he's coming back with sheep and oxen, go back to chapter 12, verse 16. It says that he, Pharaoh, entreated Abram well for her sake, and he had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. He is compounding his wealth while he is in Egypt. By the way, one of those little maid servants that he picks up was a gal named Hagar that we're going to read about in a few more chapters. She was one of the eventual fallout of their trip down to Egypt. Verse 2 is the first mention of silver or gold in Abraham's portfolio. Prior to this, apparently, he had a lot of material, agricultural type wealth, but now he has silver and gold as well. Verse 5 says, "And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents." And so both of these men, during their time in Egypt, have acquired quite a bit of wealth. You know, a lot of folks have gotten wealthy in Egypt. Egypt represents the world. And a lot of folks have sold their soul to Pharaoh, so to speak, to gather the wealth of Egypt. To do so, sometimes they're even willing to give up their wife. Even willing to leave the will of God. Even willing to compromise their integrity. Even willing to be dishonest. If while they're in Egypt, they can accumulate some wealth for themselves. Many a man has traded his wife for Pharaoh's wealth. And I tell you that some of these mansions around here, the mortgages involve a lot more than a monthly payment. They've paid a lot more than money for the wealth that they have accumulated. Sometimes even Christians can become so hungry for success and material wealth that everything else, their wife, their children, their family, the will of God, the work of God, the house of God, their integrity, their honesty, their character, all of these things are sacrificed for the temporary wealth that Pharaoh has to offer. My pastor said that he had a family in a church that he pastored at one time. He said the husband and father was a workaholic, just always working 7 days a week, never had time for church. The family came to church, he would never come to church. And one day Brother Smith went by to talk to him and try to get him to come to church. And he said, "Listen, Pastor, I am going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire if it costs me everything." He said, "What if it costs you your wife and kids?" "I will be a millionaire no matter what it costs me. I will get that. I will become a millionaire." And Brother Smith said he lost his wife, he lost his kids, he lost his health, and he never even became a millionaire. But that pursuit for wealth so dominated his life that he gave up the true wealth that he already possessed. Pharaoh will make you wealthy if you'll just give up on God. Some of our younger folks, when you become adults, you're going to have to start making decisions about where God is going to fit in your life. If you're going to be working all the time and so busy pursuing careers that you neglect God and neglect God's house and neglect God's will for your life because you're accumulating the wealth of Pharaoh instead of trusting God to give you what you need. In verse number 3, it says, "He went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai." Now Abraham has made a circuit of the land. He came in from the north. He came down through the plains on the west of Canaan, went down to Beersheba, left for Egypt. He's now come back and he's gone up around the other way, around through the mountainous area that eventually became called the Way of the Patriarchs. All the way back up around to the north part of the country again. He's seen the entire land. And he has returned to the where he had been at the first, where he put up his tent and built an altar. And there again, he called upon the name of the Lord. In Genesis, there are two returns to Bethel. Here, Abraham returned to Bethel from Egypt. In Genesis 35, his grandson, Jacob, returned to Bethel from Haran, where he'd spent more than 20 years of his life wasting away and messing his life up. But finally, he came back to Bethel, came back to God. These two stories inspired the song which says, "Back to Bethel I must go, back to where the sweet waters flow, back to the true life my soul longs to know. Bethel is calling, and I must go. Back to the beautiful path I once trod, back to the church and the people of God. Out of the cold world of sin and its woe, Bethel is calling, and I must go." You see, Abraham, he took a misstep. He went down into Egypt. Now he wants to come back to God. So where does he go? He goes back to the last place he heard from God. The last place he heard from God was back here around Bethel and Hai, where he pitched his tent and built his altar, and God appeared to him and promised him all the land of Canaan. When he wanted to get right with God, he went back to where he left God, or the last place that he had heard from God. God never spoke to him in Egypt. So now he is going back to Bethel. You know, in Luke chapter 15, we have the prodigal son. What a wonderful story. But the prodigal son in the hog pen knew where he needed to go. He said, "I will arise and go to my father."
Where had he left his father? Back at the father's house. Where would he find the father? Back at the father's house. Now these days, we build churches in the far country to keep people satisfied and keep them from ever getting right with God. We build hog pen churches so no one ever gets under conviction. For this prodigal son out here in the far country, out here in Egypt, out here wasting his living, that prodigal, wasteful son, when he came to himself, he said, I'm going back to where I left the father. I left the father at the father's house. And I'm going to make the journey back. And I'm going to get right with the father. And he came back to where he'd left the father. If a Christian gets backslidden, gets out of God's will, where do I go? You go back to where you left God. You go back to where you left God. If someone is out of church altogether, they need to get back in church. If you stop reading your Bible, guess what you need to do? You need to start reading your Bible again. If you stopped tithing or giving, you need to get back to tithing and giving. If you stopped soul winning and witnessing, guess what? You need to go back out soul winning and witnessing again. If you wandered from God's calling from your life, you know where you'll find God? Back where His calling is for your life. When we get away from God because of some sin, how are you going to get back? You have to get rid of that sin. Amen. And if you have sinned against someone and haven't made it right and had to get right with God, you go make it right. You see. Back to Bethel I must go. Back where the rivers of sweet water flow. Back to the true life my soul longs to know. Bethel is calling and I must go. And I thank God that Abraham came back. And by the way, when he came back, and later on we'll see after dealing with Lot, we'll find that God speaks to him again. He came back to the Father and left Egypt in his rearview mirror. And we thank God for that. And I'm glad that a Christian can come back to the house of God and a prodigal can come back to the will of God. But sooner or later we have to say, you know what, I'm tired of living in Egypt. I'm going home. I'm going back to the altar, going back to Bethel. And you'll find God waiting when you get there. Notice a second thought, and that is strife between brethren. In verse 5, it says, and Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. Now, I'll say again, I don't think that Lot should have ever gone with Abraham. God told Abraham to leave his father's house and his kindred. Lot was his kindred. I think that he should have been left behind, but here he is. And now we have, again, some more fallout from this decision to go down to Egypt because now they both have so much stuff that they can't even live together any longer. And I also suspect that Lot may have lost some respect for Abram. My spiritual leader, Abram, this man of a man of God, and yet why is Aunt Sarah in Pharaoh's house? Why isn't Uncle Abraham speaking up? And I think that he may have lost some respect for Abraham during that time. And perhaps that Abraham took a step down in Lot's sight. I'm reading into it, but that's how human nature tends to be. It's a good reminder to us who are leaders and parents and husbands that if we lose the respect of our followers, our wives, and our children, because of our dumb decisions or our unfaithfulness or inconsistencies, that may lead them down a wrong path. It is very important for us just confine it to parents. It is important for us as parents to live as consistently as possible, lest we lose the respect of our children. They see all of our failings, they see our dumb decisions, they see our unfaithfulness, and it does have an impact on their respect for us. How could I be my kid's father and pastor if I lose their respect? It's not possible. I've got to walk the line. Because I do not want to lose their respect, my wife's respect. And it's important for us as parents to remember that we can demand, respect me, I'm your mother, I'm your father. But respect is something that is earned or lost. It's always disillusioning
when someone you respected or looked up to does something stupid or immoral, dishonest, unfaithful. It's important for us to remember the story of Abraham and consider that Lot may have lost some of it, some respect that he once had, and maybe that colored the rest of their relationship. Now anyway, whether he should have been there or not, he is, and no matter what happened in Egypt, here they are now. Now they have so much stuff that they're having a hard time coexisting. Someone should have given them some of those coexist bumper stickers. They could have put them on the back of all their camels and donkeys. And, you know, I'm sure those things work. I mean, because America is such a country where no one coexists. I'd like for some of these people that have coexist bumper stickers, I'd like for them to fly to some Muslim country and slap one of those things on the back of a rental car and see what happens there. The reason people wear those things in our country is because they know no Christian's going to do anything about it. Because we are good at coexisting in this country. But anyway, you have these two men who can't coexist because their flocks are so, and they have so much stuff, and now their herdsmen are starting to strive together. And verse number 7, it says, there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. Now, Lot and Abraham are not fighting. It's their servants that are fighting. That's our grazing land. No, this is our grazing land. Well, we were here first. I don't care. Abraham's the boss. Well, that's our well water. That's our stream. And now they're fussing and fighting. And between the herdsmen, Abraham and Lot are not fighting, but the strife between their herdsmen is getting out of hand. And notice it says, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell then in the land. And here we have them mentioned a second time that these two brethren are fighting and the Canaanites and the Perizzites are watching. This teaches us the importance of our testimony. Christians fighting and striving carnally with each other is not a good thing when others are watching us and examining our lives. Can you imagine a Canaanite leaning over to a Perizzite and saying, "And those followers of Jehovah God, look at them, they're fighting again. The only two Jehovah followers in the whole country, and they can't even get along." It was a bad testimony. And churches and church members, they hurt their own testimonies through strife. In some small towns, some churches have the reputation, a well-earned reputation, for not existing well together. I mean, they are known for going through pastors like you change socks. You know, for the teenagers, every 4 or 5 days, you know. They go through one pastor after another, and there's always strife and fighting, and all the ex-members are talking about it, and what a terrible church it is, and all these things. And so that church has a terrible testimony inside of their town. Some church members are the worst advertising the church could possibly have. It's amazing how people will talk down their church to their family and their friends and on social media. I mean, social media especially. It's so dangerous to put, you know, I like the little picture I used to see with dirty laundry goes here and it shows a picture of a hamper, not here, and it has a symbol for Facebook. Dirty laundry goes in the hamper. Because when I was on Facebook, there were church members, and there was my family, and then there were my real friends, both of them. And then there was like 900 people that either I had met once or knew someone that I knew or knew someone that I knew that I knew or whatever. And how dangerous it is to put stuff up on there where your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your grandchildren or whatever are going to say, "Oh boy, look at the church they go to, always having problems." That's a bad testimony. Constantly causing that blogs and all that stuff. And one reason why I got off of that stuff was so much negativity, and it triggers me to be negative sometimes. And I don't need any more triggers than I already have. The Canaanite and Perizzite is listening. Those out of church parents, grandparents, children, sisters, brothers, friends, they're all listening to what we say. When was the last time you said something positive about your church to somebody else? It's a good question. I read this testimony from a preacher. I'm just going to read it to you. I could pretend that it's my story and you would know, but I'll go ahead and give credit.
Anyway, he said, I had an uncle who never came to know the Lord. My aunt used to weep and say, oh, he won't listen. Do you know why? With her lived a sister, another aunt. And I used to go there sometimes on Sundays for dinner. You know what we had for dinner? Roast preacher. One of my aunts went to the Methodist church. The other went to the Presbyterian church. And oh boy, did they try to outdo each other talking about the preacher and the fights that were going on. I used to watch my uncle. He would just sit there and eat. Then he'd get up to leave and go down to the bar for the afternoon. When he would come home in the evening, he wasn't drunk, but he sure had had several drinks. They never won him to Christ. There are a lot of people not being won today, my friend, because of the strife that is inside the church. Oh, what a terrible testimony that is to the unsaved. The Canaanite and the Perizzite are in the land. And they shouldn't be nudging each other and saying, well, look at the Baptists over there having another fight. Well, yeah, I know a person who goes to that church, they're always complaining. That's not a good advertisement for the Lord or the church. Now, in verse number 8, it says, and Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. I said last week that Abraham and Lot were both saved men, but they represent two ways of life. Abraham represents the spiritual life, and Lot represents the saved but carnal life. The spiritual man is the one who wants to end strife. The carnal man is the one who either starts it or keeps it going. 1 Corinthians 3:3 says, for ye are yet carnal. For whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal? And so the mark of a carnal Christian is envy, strife, and divisions. Of course, it's never their fault. It's always somebody else's fault. But that follows them around like pig pen's dust cloud, which is everywhere they go, because it's their nature. I'm reminded of a story I read about a man who complained. Everything stinks. This stinks, that stinks. Went through the whole day. This room stinks. My car stinks. Stinks, stinks, stinks. And he got home that night. And he said, this house stinks. And his wife said, honey, you have cheese in your mustache. Everything stinks. Yeah, because you have it right here. And that's a good picture of our attitude. We all go through life carnal, worldly, secular-minded, contentious and angry or prideful. Yeah, everything starts to stink after a while. But maybe it is your own attitude that needs to be changed. It's like the cheese needs to come out of some guy's mustache. Maybe it's not everything else stinks. Maybe I stink. Maybe I need to change. Maybe it's my carnal attitude. The spiritual man wants to make peace, but Lot never made a move to make peace. Lot here is an ungrateful, disrespectful man. He is, in Hebrew, a jerk. He's been tagging along with Abraham. He's enjoyed the blessing of God upon Abraham. He has gathered his wealth because he is with Abraham. Abraham is his elder. Abraham is the patriarch. Abraham is the leader. But here's Lot waiting for Abraham to come to him. And Abraham is the one that has to seek peace. I think Lot was ungrateful and I think he was disrespectful. When he was given the choice, he selfishly chose what he thought was the best for himself. And he shows no gratitude towards the man who brought him out of the Ur of the Chaldees and has been his father figure and been his leader and that has brought God's blessings upon his life. This uncle of his, this man of God in his life. But he's ungrateful for all the blessings. In fact, he probably thought that Abraham should be thanking him. I think ingratitude is one of the grossest of sins. I really do. I think that ingratitude is rooted in pride and selfishness. Wow, I deserve all this. No one gives me anything. I deserve it. I mentioned Sunday that I've been at graduations where married men, their wives have gone through them through school and typed up all their notebooks and have missed them while they've been gone. And they get up for graduation and give a testimony. And they talk about how much they did at school and how much they enjoyed school and what they learned at school. And not even one time gave thanks to their wife for helping them through school. To me, that's just such an attitude of ingratitude. People get to retirement and they say, look what I've done. I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Never once thank their wife or their kids or anybody else or the people that gave them a start in their careers. Ingratitude is like a Ingratitude is like stagnant water breeding mosquitoes. Ingratitude breeds all kinds of sins in life. Many Christians are very ungrateful. They'll never write a thank you card, say thank you for anything. It's all about them. All about them. I'll tell you something, that's not the mark of a spiritual person. That is the mark of a carnal Christian. The spiritual man sought peace. The carnal man sought only his own self-interest. And honestly, I feel badly for Abraham. I think it's sad when the elder has to come pleading to the younger. I think that Lot should have come to Abraham and said, Abraham, I heard that our herdsmen were fighting and I'm sorry. You know, you brought me out of Ur of the Chaldees and been so good to me. I just want you to know I'm going to take my guys about a mile further where we'll have more space because I don't want them causing you any trouble. But no, Lot doesn't do that. Abraham has to go to Lot. Say, hey, Lot. Hey, nephew. Hey, let's not have our guys fighting and striving over stuff. We've got the whole country in front of us. We're brethren. You go one way, I'll go the other. You go this way, I'll go that way. I feel bad for Abraham to go to Lot like that. I think the younger should go to the elder. I think the follower should go to the leader. But Lot does not have that spirit. You know, there are times when we have to swallow our pride. If you're going to be spiritual, there are times you've got to swallow your pride. And sometimes taking the high road is not easy. Someone's a jerk to you, you want to be a jerk back. But you know what? The spiritual Christian is seeking for peace. And that's what Abraham did. It's not easy to be spiritual, it's easy to be carnal. It's not always easy to do the right thing or be big about things. It's easy to be petty. It's easier to let the flesh have its way than to crucify the flesh and do that which is right. Abraham took the high road. Somebody's got to do it. And Abraham did it. Abraham, the spiritual man, is also the only one offering a solution. I think it was Brother Darth that told me one time. He said, I've always had a rule that you should never bring up a problem unless you also have some sort of solution. That's a good attitude. Anyone can point out the problems, and then he said, what do you think we should do about it? I don't know. I just point out problems. I don't have any solutions. Well, yeah, that's a help. What we need is more professional problem finders. Who needs problem solvers? You know. But Abraham, the spiritual man, not only pointed out what was wrong, but also offered the solution. In verse 9, he said, is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. If thou depart to the right hand, then will I go to the left. And I just want to stop and say here that Abraham didn't have to let him have anything. Because God didn't promise Lot one square foot. Y'all with me? God didn't make one promise to Lot. God didn't say he could have any of it. Abraham's being very gracious. You go that way, I'll go this way. He could have said, you know what, why don't you go back to Haran and hang out with my brother Nahor? Why don't you go back to Ur of the Chaldees and cash all that in and buy yourself a nice little ziggurat somewhere? Instead he said, you go one way, I'll go the other. He was gracious. Abraham could not have been more gracious, and yet Lot could not have been more ungrateful for it. Abraham's solution was a separation. Sometimes separation is the solution. Unfortunate as that sometimes feels at the time, Abraham was better off with Lot gone. Carnal Christians get along just fine together. In fact, carnal Christians would rather be around other carnal Christians or lost people rather than be around spiritual Christians. They'd always choose to fellowship with an unsaved or ungodly person than to fellowship with godly people. Because they have more in common. Carnal Christians have more in common with the world and the unsaved than they do with spiritual Christians. And how can these two walk together except they be agreed? Verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Now that part of the country is desolate. It's like the other side of the moon today. Hardly anything grows there. It's the Dead Sea area. It's all salt covered. Have a mountain called Mount Sodom. It's 7 miles long, just salt. Desolate area. At that time, it was like the garden, it was like Eden all over again. That's how the world has changed. That's how that part of the world has changed. And when Lot looked over to that eastern side and saw all that, it reminded him of Egypt, and he really liked Egypt.
He said, I'll take that part. That's the best place. I'll go there. And he did. Now, he liked it because it reminded him of Egypt. But notice in verse 11. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. You see how the carnal Christian gravitated toward the ungodly? He has much more in common with them than with Abraham. He'd much rather hang around that side than hang around Abraham's side. That's always unfortunate. They broke off their fellowship, and get this, they never again came back into fellowship. Never again. At one point, Lot got kidnapped in a war and was taken off as a slave, and Abraham got together the Israeli Defense Force and pursued after them and rescued him. And Lot went back to Sodom. And then it was through Abraham's intercessory prayer that Lot wasn't burned to a crisp. But then when God told Lot, get out of the country, go up to the mountains. You know who was in the mountains? Abraham. Abraham could see the smoke of the furnace of Sodom rising because he was in the mountains over there. And he said, go up to the mountains. But he's not going to go back to Abraham. He ends up going up into, he'd rather be in a cave than go back to Abraham. And they never did come back into fellowship again. Once they separated here, they went two different ways the rest of their lives. I think that Lot lost out. I think that he did. It says, Then Lot chose. He pitched his tent towards Sodom. And you'll find that one bad step usually leads to another. That's why we hate those first bad steps. Now, preacher, you're just too sensitive about stuff. I know. Because I hate that one bad step leads to another bad step, leads to another bad step. Before you know it, you're over in Sodom. One bad step leads to another. We all have choices to make in life, but when Lot made his choice, he was also choosing a wife. He was choosing his children. He was choosing their schools. He was choosing their upbringing. He was choosing his sons-in-law. He was choosing a cave, and he was choosing incest, and he was choosing grandsons by his own daughters. That was all that was on the line when he chose to separate from Abraham and move towards Sodom. You see, Satan's a liar, and he's a deceiver, and he's a false advertiser. He will never tell you what's at the end of the road. He only tells you how good it'll feel to finally get rid of Abraham out of your life and get to do what you want to do and have all the wealth you want to have. Boy, must have felt good when he got away from Abraham, got over here and said, boy, I'm glad he's not looking over my shoulder any longer. I'm glad he's not there telling me to be holy and stuff. Now I can do what I want to do. But that was a wrong path. And eventually, it led to a terrible, terrible destination. There's a third and final thought here in verses 14 through 17, and that is that God appeared again to Abram. In verse 14, the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land and the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. God had not spoken to him since he left Bethel the first time. Now he's come back and he's making him a promise. I think Abraham wept when Lot left. I think he loved Lot. I think Abraham really loved people. He loved Ishmael. He loved Isaac. He loved his wife. I believe he loved Lot. God came to him and said, well, he's made his choice, but you know what? He's not going to get any of that land. Everything's going to be yours and your seeds. All of this. North, south, east, and west. Just keep on walking through the land, Abram. I'll be with you. And it's all going to be yours. Verse 18, then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Abraham sure liked to build altars, didn't he? Mamre. Again, names in Genesis mean something. Mamre means fatness or excess or bounty. Hebron means fellowship. So we have the bounty or fatness of fellowship.
He doesn't have fellowship with Lot anymore, but now he's got fellowship with God. He made the right choice. There is a blessing there's a fatness of blessing in fellowship with God, and Abraham chose it. Hebron is in the south central part of the land, and that's where Abraham lived most of his life. He lived there, he buried his wife there, and later he was buried there, and Isaac lived mostly in that area all of his life as well. And so that became his favorite place in all the land of Canaan. But as we finish our message tonight, as we consider Abraham and Lot, which path will you follow? The spiritual man, the carnal man, Abraham, Lot, faith, faithlessness. And remember, when you make your decisions, you may be choosing much more than just the path you'll take, because you're also going to choose the destination that you make.